malware and how it's infecting computers. So let's get started with the biggest outstanding vulnerability that we were all waiting to be patched since roughly April or so, and that is the Intel AMT vulnerability. This was one of those vulnerabilities that was disclosed as part of the NSA hacking toolkit or the CIA hacking toolkit getting revealed, that they had effectively zero-day hacks for the vast majority of Intel devices out there. Now, I don't think that this is anything against Intel. I would much rather use an Intel processor with Intel AMT capabilities than something else as an alternative that's available in the market. By and large, Intel is absolutely doing the best job of any other chip manufacturer out there, chip and chipset software manufacturer, with regards to securing systems. So I think this is just a matter of it's software. It's stuff invented by humans. Things invented by humans cannot possibly be 100% foolproof all the time because none of us are that good. So the background of this is that there's this Intel AMT vulnerability. And pretty much virtually every Intel device out there was probably vulnerable to this vulnerability if that device ever had any of the capabilities of vPro or its related components. So vPro is a really sweet piece of functionality that is really ubiquitously used in the business world, not just in large corporate, but even in the SMB space, even in a business where there's one computer, but that computer, we want to have better management for it. So we'd use things like vPro. And what vPro does when properly programmed is it gives you much better information about that hardware, and it also gives you the ability to much more expediently and robustly manage that hardware effectively. So you can imagine that if there was a vulnerability in that, it may lead to some bad guys getting hardware level remote control or hardware level access to your computer. And that's obviously a problem. So this vulnerability was disclosed sometime in April, and there really was no available fix for it at the time. Because what it came down to is the hardware manufacturers, so, you know, Dell, HP, Toshiba, Lenovo, etc., they needed to sit down and write new versions of the BIOS for the computers that they have designed and deployed and, you know, offered for sale. And those new BIOSes would contain a new chipset firmware for the vPro components, which are literally embedded on the motherboard. So due to the sensitivity of this, vPro being a hardware level capability, it's not something that just simply gets patched through, you know, a simple software update. This is a BIOS update. So it's not going to come through Windows updates. It's not going to come through Microsoft update. So you literally, and because it's coming from the manufacturer of the hardware, you literally have to go and look for a BIOS update for your computer system. Now, with Dell systems, Dell workstations, I should say, workstations and laptops, it's extremely easy. You just go get Dell Command Update. It very well may already be installed on your computer. So you just run Dell Command Update and then install the BIOS update. And on the server side, there is the PowerEdge controller. So it's what's called an iDRAC. It's a Dell remote access controller. It, again, is hardware level remote access control. And we can use that with what's a component called the lifecycle controller to install firmware updates such as BIOS updates. So it's as of this week, I am now seeing that these BIOS updates are available for a lot of systems. So now that these BIOS updates are available that do include the patch for the Intel AMT vulnerability, I think it's really important that you get busy and get BIOS updates installed on your computer. Now, I have some extremely important caveats for you that this is not going to be just any old standard BIOS update. Now, on a standard BIOS update on a computer that has hard drive level encryption enabled or any level of functionality that relies upon the TPM, the Trusted Platform Module, which again is a very significant portion of computers today. Historically, or I should say typically, a BIOS update is not going to modify the TPM. It's not going to modify anything having to do with the vPro chipset. So when you need to do a BIOS update, normally you're going to suspend, not disable, but suspend the hard drive encryption on the computer. Then install the BIOS update and reboot, and when your computer reboots, it will reactivate the hard drive encryption. Well, in this case, what's actually happening with this special BIOS update that includes new chipset code for the TPM, the vPro components, then, which addresses the Intel AMT vulnerability, what's going to end up happening is that your hard drive encryption is going to perceive that the hardware has changed. And it has, because you've got new code. There's new code for vPro, and it's going to detect that there is a change in the Trusted Platform Module in the TPM itself. So, if you don't actually disable the hard drive encryption first before you install the BIOS update, then what will happen is you install that BIOS update, computer comes back up, except it's going to tell you that, well, you've got a problem. You need to use what's called a recovery key for your hard drive encryption because the standard decryption passphrase no longer works, because the standard decryption passphrase is also reliant upon a secondary function, which is the hardware level authentication provided by the Trusted Platform Module. So, if the TPM code has changed, then, as far as your hard drive encryption is concerned, it's going to think that the hard drive has changed, and so therefore it's not going to allow you to use the standard decryption passphrase. So, I stress again the importance of actually doing a full disable on the hard drive encryption before you attempt to install this special BIOS update. So, you literally go into whatever your hard drive encryption program is, and you decrypt the drive. And that could take several hours, most likely, in fact. So let it do that after it's fully decrypted, then install the BIOS update. Computer comes back up, and while you're at it, you might as well install any remaining Windows updates, of which there were roughly 56 this week, so get busy. And I'm not saying that all 56 are going to be applicable to your computer operating system. That is kind of like a totality number that I've seen. There's potentially actually more because with any particular vulnerability, Microsoft has to release patches for a wide variety of different operating systems. So one vulnerability could end up in, 8 to 10 patches or so, simply because there's so many different operating systems that that they actually actively support from a patching perspective. So don't be scared off by the number 56. Not all of those are going to be applicable to your endpoint, to your system. Okay, so back to this BIOS thing. It's going to install the BIOS update, reboot the computer, install your Windows updates, make sure your computer comes all up happy time, then go ahead and re-encrypt the entire hard drive. Now, please note When you re-encrypt your hard drive, this is going to be the same as the first time you ever encrypted it, meaning you're going to have to reestablish whatever the decryption process is, and you're going to have to reestablish whatever the recovery key is and how that's stored and how it's updated and all of these things. So if you don't know what you're doing with that, get some appropriate help. You really should not be looking at these things and saying, "Oh my gosh, well, I'm never going to encrypt my hard drive because it's such a pain in the butt." Well, no, what's a pain in the butt is having all of your data compromised because you lost control over that endpoint and you didn't have full hard drive encryption enabled on that endpoint. That is a much bigger pain in the butt than simply once in a great, great while, you might actually have to disable encryption and then re-enable it. And you get to do so at the time of your choosing, as opposed to a chaos and crisis created by the bad guys, which is never at the time of your choosing. Right? So we always have to look much more favorably at the things that we actually have control over. Those are never as painful as the items that come from when the bad guy gets to choose the time frame. All right, so that's the Intel AMT vulnerability patch. It is available, in my experience, looking at a lot of these hardware manufacturers. I think you need to go out and do BIOS updates. And you know what? While you're at it, definitely install all the rest of the firmware updates and driver updates for your systems. Okay. So as I said, there was this big batch of Windows patches or Microsoft update patches this week. Some of them were for Office as well, a variety of versions of Office. And so please do, get those deployed on your system. Now, another big update that came out was Adobe Flash version 26. So the previous version was a subversion of major version 25. Well, now this update is so big that Adobe has gone to Flash version 26. And this is a really important patch that you do get it downloaded and installed right away. And here at QPC, we try to get all of these patches deployed to all of the client systems that we manage within 24 hours of the patch's release. And the automation systems that we use make that possible in combination with the, just due diligence and the vigilance of patching, patching, patching that we subscribe to. And so, if you're looking for that level of automation for your business, feel free to reach out to me. As I can certainly give you a bunch of tips on how you can do that. There's a variety of ways to do automated patching and put automation in place. And no one solution is going to be the right fit for everyone. So it's really all about cost profile and level of functionality that you're looking for. But the main theme here is don't just not patch stuff. You have to patch things. I mean, we collectively as humanity should have learned all the way back to the year 1997 when the I Love You virus came out, and it basically wreaked havoc across a whole slew of companies simply because they had not installed patches that were released more than 6 months prior. Now, that is just abysmally pathetic. So companies could have avoided having extremely detrimental financial impact had their IT people just decided to install patches that had been available for more than 6 months, right? Okay. So just please, just install the patches, okay? Now, the Social Security Administration has, as of this week, enabled their multi-factor authentication solution again, except they're now doing it with an optional opt-in variety, as opposed to like the mandatory way that they went in before. So you may recall early in the year, I think it was February sometime, where the Social Security Administration enabled multi-factor authentication, and they basically just did a hard enable for everyone. And this became a problem because the multi-factor authentication mechanism that they chose to utilize exclusively was text message based multi-factor authentication, as opposed to something that was more flexible, like, well, you can take a text message or you can take an email. So the problem that they encountered is they got a whole lot of phone calls from people who apparently didn't have cell phones or didn't have a way to receive text messages, because there's more ways to receive text messages than just cell phones, okay? So what the SSA did at that point in time was just to turn it off entirely, which I don't really think was the right approach, but whatever. They did then decide that they were going to make an attempt to redeploy multi-factor authentication in order to provide additional security for people's accounts when those people wanted to selectively opt into a multi-factor authentication system. And they sent out this pre-communication email, which I give them a lot of kudos for doing that. That was approximately 2 to 3 weeks ago that they basically let everybody who had an SSA account know that, hey, we're going to be doing this at this date on your account. You can enroll if you want to. And of course, we recommend that you do enroll in multi-factor authentication. So keep in mind the thing that was driving this to begin with was that the SSA was trying to enable people to have more security for their accounts in order to prevent theft of credentials that would result in Social Security payment fraud. So really, I think it was a big thing that they did that, and really a good step forward. And now I can say that their implementation is sufficient. Would I prefer that they were using a more sophisticated multi-factor authentication system? Yeah, obviously. But if you're going from nothing to something, nothing to something is much better, right? It's sometimes you have to go from nothing to something before you can get to perfection. Okay. So I'm going to give the Social Security Administration props for getting to something that is acceptable and resulting in an effective level of protection for people that wish to enroll. So probably everyone listening to this show has an SSA.gov account, so I would strongly suggest you go out there and turn on multi-factor authentication for your account as soon as possible. I mean, multi-factor authentication is undeniably an extremely effective tool at preventing credential theft. And it's absolutely important you protect your SSA.gov account, because one of the big things that's happened from a fraud perspective is the bad guys steal your credentials, they get in there, they change where your SSA payments are getting sent to. And beyond that, I mean, let's say you're not getting any SSA payments, you're not getting any distributions yet. Well, you certainly don't want the bad guys to tamper with your account in any way. They could be using the contents of that account to engage in things like identity theft. So it really behooves all of us to engage in multi-factor authentication with regards to that. So it's available now. Please go and sign up. All right. So the PowerPoint mouse over malware was discussed as something that hit this week, and there was a lot of hubbub over it, and rightly so, because it was so bad that basically somebody gets a PowerPoint file and they don't even have to click. This is really important that you understand, right? Remember, I told you some time ago that you can actually get viruses by simply viewing image files that are infected. Yes, it's possible. Equally as possible, it's actually possible to take a bunch of information like a database file and encapsulate it in an image file and hide the data there. These are rather sophisticated techniques, actually. It's called stenography. Okay. But what's not very sophisticated is sending somebody an infected PowerPoint file or a PPS file, and having them open that file and not actually click any of the links, but they moused over the link and it led to an infection vector. Now, I have to stress how crucially dramatic this is, because what has been taught to everyone in the business world, and certainly, home users as well, up to this point in time, is don't click bad links, right? We think that if you don't click the bad link, then you're okay because you didn't click it. Well, the problem in this case is that there is certain content that can be activated with strictly a mouse over. And it's because the way that it works is mousing over a link can engage in a preview function. And I think you've all seen this in Outlook as an example. And Outlook is not the only tool that does this. I'm just using Outlook as an example. But if you mouse over something, it can provide you a preview, depending upon the context. If you mouse over it, it's going to, in that preview functionality, effectively do like a preview launch. So because of that, it is doing a minor level of execution. It's not the same as opening the file entirely. But in this particular example, banking Trojans were getting delivered to people via these mouse over or hover over links. So let's think about what's the infection vector here. Let's take a phishing or a spear phishing example. So some bad guys have figured out who the CFO or the accountant or whoever handles the financials for a company is. So who is that? And then they send these crafted files as an attachment with a bunch of other content in the email designed to entice that person to open the things up. And again, you think, all right, don't click on anything, and then I'm safe. But in this case, a banking Trojan is actually able to get installed simply because of a malicious mouse over link. All right, so what could potentially prevent this from ever getting to your people so that they're not going to even see this malicious content so they can't accidentally mouse over it and get infected? The answer to that is you really need to have very, very, very sophisticated things protecting your email. You also need to have sophisticated endpoint protection. So first off, your best scenario is one where this content is scanned in the email chain. So hopefully it's being scanned either before it gets onto the email server or after it gets onto the email server, but before it gets delivered to the end user's mailbox. And for that, you could be using like Trend Micro's hosted email security as a smart host. And alternatively, if you have something like Office 365, you can be using Trend Micro's Cloud App Security product. In those cases, those products are going to see that malicious URL embedded inside the content, and then it will just quarantine the entire file, and your people will never actually see that. If you have Office 365 E5 licensing, which most people are not using E5, but if you have E5, then you can be using the advanced threat protection capabilities, so the ATP components. But, like I say with everything, all of this stuff actually has to be properly programmed, and it is no small thing to get it properly programmed. It's just not. This is not something that you as a business owner are going to be able to go in and program. The vast majority of people in the IT industry don't have the skill to program these things to be effective. And the whole point of having a security solution in place is you want it to be effective, because if you spend money on it and then it doesn't actually do its job because it never got programmed correctly, then what was the point of you spending the money? just to make yourself feel good, you know, because that's pretty much all it did, is it was a placebo at that point. Okay, so I wanted you to know about that because that's a big thing that's happening right now. And if you don't have those level of protections in place for your email system, get them in place. Contact me if you need help. All right, let's move on to adware is running rampant, and it's running rampant throughout the Android world, and it's called Fireball, and it's affecting PCs as well. So far, it's infected about 250 million endpoints, so this is pretty big bad stuff. And the way that this adware is going to be prevented from getting onto your computers is the same thing I've been talking about for the last decade, right? You have to block the advertisement vector. You have to. The vast majority of advertisements are hacked and they contain malicious junk. That's why they're called malvertisements. So we have to just block the advertisement vector through category blocking. We can do that in a combination of ways, and you should always do it in a combination of ways because no one approach is ever going to be 100% effective. So you could be using iWAS, you could be using a WatchGuard Firebox with a properly programmed web blocker, you could be using endpoint protection like Trend's worry-free business security product or their Office Scan product. You know, all of which, when properly programmed, are extremely effective at just stopping this stuff. And by the way, you can actually block the advertisements on the Android devices with your Firebox as well. There is a Trend Micro client for the Android and iPhone devices, which is kind of basic, but there is a way to get iWAS to protect your Androids and iPhones very, very effectively. And if you're, and you know, we're talking about something that's $40 a year, so it's not cost prohibitive at all. But again, it has to actually be set up and programmed correctly. So even if you want your mobile devices to just not get infected by something like the Fireball adware, there are very cost-effective means to do so. As I said, you know, iWAS is about $40 per year per endpoint. So it's not cost prohibitive and it's extremely effective. So I'd strongly encourage you to look into those solutions, but most importantly, you need to be aware that these problems exist and you need to be aware that there's mitigations that are available. You don't need to be getting infected. Your computers and your endpoints don't need to be getting damaged. You shouldn't be dealing with ransomware. You shouldn't be dealing with viruses and other bad things happening to your endpoints. These computers are supposed to be reliable tools that enable you to do what it is that you want to do, whether it be pleasure or business. So, in order to get there, you have to have these mitigations in place. And if you play by the book, the verified strategic formula in order to get a secure system in place, then it works, but you have to maintain it. This is not a set it and forget it thing. You don't just get it implemented and then go, oh yeah, it's perfect forever. No, this is something that actually has to be maintained. But you don't need to be a victim of the bad stuff. So I hope you enjoyed the show today, and that's it for today. As always, send me email with comments and questions.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, June the 24th at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast of a tribute to Mary Tyler Moore. We're featuring the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan. The WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast, a tribute to Mary Tyler Moore, Saturday morning, June 24th at 11:15.